the Approaching the Natural podcast with Sid Garza Hillman. Sid is the author of Approaching the Natural, a health manifesto, a certified nutritionist, health coach, and programs director at the Stanford Inns Wellness Center on the Mendocino coast of California.
Hello, small steppers. This is Sid Garza Hillman, and this is my podcast. Boom. Clean opening, you guys. I really got a good start. I'm feeling good about this, unless you're just joining me, in which case, a little bit of a fail, and that's okay. Stick with me, and you're going to see, hopefully, how things play out here, but welcome one and all. I hope your week was fruitful and multiplicable. This is going downhill fast. I can feel it. It's okay. It's okay. Buckle in for the ride, you guys. If you're on a treadmill, literally just put that strap around your waist. Buckle it tight. You know, the little safety one that pulls the red thing out. Tape the red thing on there so that even if you fall, treadmill keeps going. That's what I want for all of you. That metaphor of I have no idea what. Anyway, welcome, you guys. And if you're just joining me, wow. And that's all I can say. But I come here every week to discuss my small steps approach to health and happiness to help all of you, hopefully. Otherwise, just please do not waste your time coming here. But hopefully to help you all live a little better in the modern world. How to take on your lives with the power that you already have. And I hope that I am just a messenger to get you to go, oh, crap, I've got more power than I thought I did. I'm not trapped at all. I can kind of just do this and I can make it okay in the process so I'm not beating the crap out of myself. And great. That's kind of the internal dialogue of you. I'm sure that sounds exactly like you. Anyway, it's how to live better and happier in the modern world via my small steps approach. That's what I do here every week. And I talk about some ideas around that, some concepts around that. I haven't done an interview in a while for no other reason than I've just been kind of rolling. And I'll just admit, lazy. What do I want to just email? Hey, you want to be on my podcast, man? Which would be great. I should do that. But anyway, if you guys have any ideas of who I should have on and who you want to hear on this podcast, email me. Good. Great. podcast@sidgarzahillman.com. That's how you get a hold of me. Anyway, so you're going to get into a little bit of the power of us today. But first, a few little, you know how they go. Strava and YouTube, Sid Garza Hillman. Yeah, sure, Twitter, Facebook, but I kind of like Instagram. Honestly, you guys, a little bit of stuff about the Facebook, Twitter thing, like it's fine and I post now and then, but man, I'm not good at it, but really I don't like it. And I'm also not one of these people who pays money every month to get likes from just random people who really don't like you, but they somehow get, I don't even know how Facebook works. So I actually kind of like the fact that when somebody likes me, it's for real. That's just me. But, you know, whatever. But yeah, so I'm not as active as I should be. And I don't even know why there's a should there. I'm doing okay, feeling good. But my attention is in YouTube. And Strava is just pure fun and positiveness. So I'm just digging that all over the place. Still getting new followers. If you're not on Strava, get on there. Boom. I'm not sponsored by them, but that's how it rolls. A little bit of race news. I'm putting on the Mendocino Coast 50K in case you're just joining me, MendocinoUltra.com. It's a 50K race. If you think, oh man, that sounds good. It's sold out. I don't know how that happened, but now I'm up to 115 with 22 on the wait list. Can you believe I've got 22 on the wait list? I even have some locals unhappy with me. They think that they should be let in because they're locals. One of them was, this is great. She goes, I didn't register because I figured you weren't going to get enough signups and you were going to have to cancel it. So that's why she didn't register for the race. Now she wants to do the race and is wondering why I won't let all the locals in. What can you do? You put your ass out into the world. You're going to have the people respond. Some of those people, nutty nut nut. I don't know what to tell you. In fact, I appreciate the nutty nut nut. So bring it. Mm. Now you might be thinking I'm going to say mushroom coffee. I'm not. Mendocino, what does it say? Mendocino Brewing Red Tail Amber Ale is what's going on. I'm having a beer. Don't really know why. I'm really not a, well, I like beer, but I'm not generally a beer drinking guy during the podcast, mostly because of the carbonation. but I'm digging it. And actually, I might have some cool news coming up from this very brewing company. because they're sponsoring my race. And that's not why I'm drinking their beer. I actually like their beer and they're not sponsoring this podcast, but there's some cool news coming out about the race. And so that's kind of cool. Okay, good. Can I be more vague and just non-informational? Probably. Thank you, everybody, for iTunes reviews. If you're interested in me as a health coach, I work with people all over the country. It's a unique model. So if you're interested, just shoot me an email. You can find out more about that. But you can go to SidGarzaHillman.com to donate to this podcast. It really does help. You guys don't understand. Or maybe you do. I hope you do. But it really does. Like, for real. You can buy t-shirts, mugs, bracelets, a custom signed copy of my book. And there we are. I work at the Stanford Inn. Part of my job, other than being a health coach, is that I head up their wellness center. And they have retreats all throughout the year, including a running retreat with Matt Frazier, No Meat Athlete. Got a few signups for that. In the June retreat, there's 15% off the March one, but there's also cooking intensives and healthy living retreats. There we go. I'll be in Marshall, Texas. That's coming up. Flights are booked, you guys. Flying into Dallas. They said just fly into Shreveport, but that's not going to work out for us. So I'm going to fly into Dallas, spend the night in Dallas, jump in a car, drive to Marshall, spend a couple nights there, and then drive home to Dallas, and then a flight. You needed to know that like a freaking hole in the head. Edinburgh Veg Fest, August 6th and 7th. World Veg Fest, October 2016. Don't have dates on that yet. Okay. So last week I talked about the nostalgia of me. Just kind of that, what that was. It was David Bowie dying and the lost tapes of my band, the guy that was going to do a documentary and never did. And so he sent me the tapes. I haven't looked at them in 11 years almost. And so I looked at those, got real nostalgic for a moment anyway. That's kind of gone now. But I did talk about that last week. But I also did a video as promised. So if you guys want to check that out, that's on my YouTube channel. It's called Are You Feeling Nostalgic? And I just kind of talked about that a little bit. Also showed a little bit of the footage. One of the pieces of footage I didn't show, which I find very interesting, is in one of the interviews with me, and he interviews the whole band, but with one of the interviews of me, I'm actually talking about how it's important to me as a singer-songwriter, musician, to do the things I'm doing, even though it's really hard for me to leave my wife and child. I had one at the time, now I've got three. But I talk about how it's important to me to do these things so that I'm not with regret, so that I feel that I've done this, because I don't want to be that kind of dad who's, when they're with their kid, is thinking, I wish I had done this. You're the reason I didn't get to do these things. And so that balance there of, you know, doing things that are good for you, that make you feel happy and fulfilled, because that translates into your relationships with your children, your family, your friends, your coworkers. I've always argued that. But what's funny is this is in 2005. This is before, 4 years before I even thought about being a nutritionist, health coach, a year before I even moved up here. And I was already in that headspace. I then just translated and sort of transferred that into the health and happiness realm. But that's what I'm arguing. If you guys have read my book, you'll know. Holistic self-interest. To me, and I've made this argument before, and I've done it when I've given talks, it's as ethical a decision as anything else to treat yourself well. I believe it's an ethical decision. I think that what we do is we think, oh, well, I'll take care of myself last because it's wrong if I take care of myself. I think it's the actual right thing to do. I think that we have a responsibility, frankly, to our species and to the earth to take better care of ourselves. That's an ethical decision for me. It's what I think. And that's the argument I make here every week. You could disagree with me, and that's cool if you do. It's fine. But I hope that you let me, you know, at least have a chance to make my case. So a little bit about that on nostalgic. I saw that footage and I was like, I'll be damned. I was still in that moment of like, just that a little bit torn of, you know, going on tour to play music, what I'd always wanted to do, but then doing it at the time that I had a wife and child, and it just being in some ways miserable, but then not as miserable as it would have been if I had just not gone. And then thought to myself, God, I wonder what that would have been like. Talk about an ultimate Arsenal experience. I know what it's like, which is cool now because I'm not torn about it anymore. I'm not going, geez, I never did that. Maybe I can still get that going. I did it. It's fine. Great. Wouldn't change a thing, but I ain't going back. At least not for that long. Yeah, the carbonation thing's kind of a bummer on beer. Just, I wonder if they could just do non-carbonated beer. Wait, That's whiskey. Okay. So that's my YouTube video. Go check that out on the Sid Garza Hillman YouTube channel. Boom. Update, hashtag dial back day. But first, integrated exercise. I'm still rolling with that, you guys. I'm doing 22 push-ups, 22 squats, 7 times a day, spread out. Now, again, I want to be clear. I have an alarm set so that it goes off every hour. And so every hour, I jump down and I do my squats, my sit-ups. However, basically 99.9% of every day, I never hit on the hour. It's just impossible. On when you know, the 3 o'clock bell rings on my phone, boom, the chances of me being in a place where I can just be like, okay, good, I'm going down here in the middle of a meeting, you know, whatever. And so, but I have that app and I kind of, it logs my thing and I make them up and I still spread them out. I don't do them all at once. But that's just what that is. So if you guys are trying that, it's not like you have to. If you're thinking, I can't do that because my schedule's so busy, I'll never be able to do something on the hour. It's not really about on the hour. It's how I've spread it out. But really, it's about spreading out quick little jolts of movement throughout your day so that you don't have to partition a huge amount of time. When I do find the time, I go down and do 22 squats and 22 sit-ups, and it takes me literally about a minute, maybe a minute and a half, maybe. So it's working for me, but that's 154 push-ups a day most days. Now, the other thing I did is, as I'm getting a little bit more into that, and 154 is not a small number now, I started with 5 push-ups 6 times a day, so I started with 30 per day, now about 150. That's 5 times. I am giving myself a little bit more rest, so I'm alternating days of that with days of pull-ups, where I'm doing 8 pull-ups 7 times in a given day. So I'm alternating that, and that seems to be working really well. I've always wanted to be able to do like 10 pull-ups. Never been able to, never had that kind of upper body strength, but man, is it coming. It's awesome. So, and very easy. Like, I don't have to go to a gym. I just wear my clothes that I'm in, just jump on the pull-up bar with my little assistance bands and do them, and then post them to Strava. So cool on that. If you guys are trying that, I really, really recommend it. I have a client right now and he's got going, you know, some stuff like that too. And it just breaks up your day without really breaking up your day. Get it? It breaks up your day without breaking up your day. The Approaching the Natural Podcast, TM. Okay. The dial back day on it today. If you're thinking about doing that, which I know people are doing it, here's how you decide what to dial back on. Ready? It's very simple. Base it on the thing that you, during the week, you might go, damn, I wish I hadn't done that, or man, I wish I didn't do that. That's what you dial back on. And you take one day a week, for me, it's dessert, and you go, just I'm take one day to kind of reset my clock on that and not do dessert, like tonight. Now, I've kind of taken it, as you know, Monday through Thursday, just kind of like it's been really working for me, so it's more like a dial back Monday through Thursday. Everything, you guys, I can't say this enough. There are no strict rules to being a small stepper. There are no, well, here's the way that the dial back day works. It's a way of thinking. It's a way of approaching your life. It's a way of coming at your decisions day to day so that you are benefiting yourself day to day and learning how to live better. This is to me, and look, I'm this guy, and so I'm coming here every week to sell this to you, but there's no better way, in my opinion, to get clear on the things that you want in your life and to stay focused on why it is you're doing the things you're doing. It's a great system to say always day to day, and this is why I always say, you know, like my dial back day is not restriction. Why? Because my eye is on the ball all the time. My eye is on the ball all the time. I always know that the reason I'm doing a dial back day is because, excuse me, I want to treat myself better in this way. I want to live better. I want to feel good. I want to feel better. This is helping me to that end. And I'm hyper-focused on that. It's not about weight loss because that's just going to frustrate the crap out of me. If it's about weight loss, I'm never going to lose enough in one day to make it real at all. Forget about a scale. People, you know, lose weight in a cleanse and they go, oh my God, I lost 15 pounds. It's thousands and thousands of calories that you so did not lose. You lost water and your scale shows that you did, but you're going to gain it back. This is real. This is feeling good because will lead to weight loss, by the way, but as a full secondary, because you know I always say it's a side effect of health. Weight loss is a side effect. It's one of the many beneficial side effects. If you make it the goal, there's 1,000 ways to lose weight and most of them are super unhealthy and most of them will result in you gaining the weight back. If you make health and happiness a goal, you'll get to the weight, but it's going to mean a lot less because you're going to be feeling so good you don't really give a crap. Boom. Dig it, right? Good system, Sid. Thank you. Okay. Small steps, by the way, if you're at a place, see, like I got a flat stomach. I'm in good shape. You know, I ran 15 miles with Sid on Saturday. More on that in a second. But I'm feeling good generally. But the thing that kind of pokes its head is this kind of dessert thing that gets me down, right? I do it and I can't help myself and I convince myself in the moment, more on that later. Then the next day I wake up and go, crap, I so did not want that. And that's when I realized that that was a not me thing instead of a me thing. If you're just joining me, go back to lots of other episodes that I've done. The me, not me of it. So based on the me, not me of that, I say, okay, well, I don't need to make any drastic dial backs in terms of my food because I'm in good shape. I'm at a healthy weight. I don't need to dial back things in terms of maybe movement or something like that. But the one thing that's kind of sticking my craw is this dessert thing. It bothers me that I can't control myself. And so I've done this thing where I liberate myself from that trap and say, I'm going to be very conscious about this and make this decision today. And of course, I elicit the help of my wife, which I did a mere hour ago when I got home and said, hey, can you know, this is my day. And she's got her own version of this, which isn't exactly like mine. And I said, hey, can you help me? Like, no dessert. I need that help, you guys. It's fine. It's fine. Not a huge deal. It's not, you know, derailing me. But just me asking for that help is a huge step for me over time. And also me asking for that helps me not need her help. So figure that one out. Unravel that one. Okay. My daughter's fish died yesterday. The name of the fish, Severus Snape. Severus Snape, of course, in the movies, Harry Potter, played by Alan Rickman. Alan Rickman, who passed away last week. I mean, we're talking full circle, you guys. I got nostalgic about Alan Rickman last week. The fish dies, fish named Severus Snape. Can't get away from this. Coming back to present. Anyway, the small steps process, what I was trying to say, is that the small steps process allows us over time to notice these things that are sticking in our craw, to notice because I'm more aware than I was, let's say, 15 years ago, and I could easily convince myself more easily than I do now, still can, but not as easily, the things that are coming out, and I'm like, that's not, I don't want to do that. I'm more okay to admit certain things, like I don't really have that much control over this dessert, and so I want to not do that, because it, why? Again, eye on the ball, makes me feel better. Okay, moving on. Yeah, I'm not into this beer. You may notice, without even noticing, that I'm going to show up back here with a mushroom coffee, and it'll be like nothing changed at all. Mushroom coffee accomplished. Is that slick? Am I just like an editing fiend? I got myself a mushroom coffee. Can't you tell? Watch. Oh, God, that's annoying. I'm sorry. Okay, where were we? See, I got up and made myself a mushroom coffee. So you guys, it's seamless. For me, I just did like 1,800 things. I went to the market. I combed my hair. Okay. I got lost. I got lost on Saturday. I have to tell you just a little bit about this just because it was... it wasn't that enjoyable. And this is just shows you the difference of perception of the same event. So I'm running with Sid. I was so geared up for this run. Why? Because it was the last section of my ultra. I've run every other section. This was the last. I was going to run the very last about 14 miles. I was hoping that it would turn out to be 14 miles because therefore the mileage on the whole map would be correct, et cetera, et cetera. So there we go. And we take off on this run. And we're supposed to finish up basically right by the Stanford Inn on the Big River where the race starts and finishes. We had left a car there. We were going to run from another point and end up there. Boom, there's my car waiting for me when we return. Well, we took a little bit of a wrong turn. I want to say it was Sid's fault, and I would be right, except for it was this Sid, not the other Sid, and therefore it was a bummer. But I saw a sign. I was like, I don't think we go that way. And I consulted the map that I did not bring with me. That was number one mistake, didn't bring the map. And I was like, I don't think we go this way, but we totally needed to go that way. So we went the wrong way. And we realized by looking at the sun and the river flowing that we didn't, I think we were like in Alice in Wonderland. The river was flowing east. I don't even know how that's possible toward the sun. Even though the river we were running along is supposed to head west. Anyway, we got so off track. This is not a joke. Instead of ending up where my car was, we ended up completely in another area 15 miles inland on a highway that is like 10 miles north of where my car is. So we were 15 miles inland. We showed up on a highway, no cell signal, tried a call box, didn't work. Put my thumb out, you guys. Hitchhiked. Boom. 1974. On the road again. Freaking Jack Kerouac-ing up. Just put my thumb out. Guess what? Just like in On the Road, a Toyota Prius picked us up. I felt like I need to grow a mustache because this is happening. 19-year-old kid, just nice kid, picked up, boom, first car. I mean, I'm assuming it's because of my physique. Pulled right over and picked us up, drove us all the way back to the coast where our respective spouses reluctantly picked us up, freezing in front of a supermarket. In that run, getting lost, we had to walk and wade, because it was about waist high, through a river, and it was very cold, and it was raining, and by the time we finished, man, was I over it. Meanwhile, Sid, during the run, she goes, well, this is an adventure, and I go, I don't want an adventure, I want to finish the frickin' run. She later described me as being low blood sugar and grumpy, is what she said. Now, was I a little bit low blood sugar? Possibly, because what I brought was one gel and one little thing of water, which usually I'm okay with, but what was supposed to be about a 2.5 hour run or maybe 3 hours was 4 hours by the time we made it back to the supermarket and so on and so forth. So I was pretty dehydrated and not feeling happy at all. Ran fine, but man, if you follow me on Instagram, I was not joking. That look on my face was real and did not enjoy that. She's like, this is an adventure. And I was like, I just want to get this drink. I go home, I have an espresso. Moving on. Okay, you guys. So back to business. So in this past week, this is what I'm doing these weeks, right? I'm asking you these questions, calling it the Did You series. So did you last week try a dial back day? Did you try to incorporate integrated exercise? Did you go too big on that? Well, I can do 10 push-ups 5 times a day. That's easy. Well, maybe you didn't because it's hard because of the wall of behaviors you have in place and you couldn't make a dent in that with that amount. So you got to bring it back down to 1 push-up 3 times a day. Is that maybe what you tried? Did you try to, because you want to read and learn about a new subject, to read 1 paragraph per day? Did you try that? Well, that doesn't make, that's going to take me forever to read that book. Yeah, if you stuck at 1 paragraph per day, but when you start, you build. So when you start and you get your foot in the door and it gets into something that you begin doing most of your days, the most of the time, you guys, then all of a sudden 1 paragraph to 2, 2 to 4, but you're thinking about the book. So now you're linking up the free time that you have because you have it. I'm telling you, you do. If you say to me, I don't have any free time, you ain't a small, well, you're a small stepper because you're listening to this, so good on you. But if you say you have zero free time, it means that you're equating free time with a certain amount of time that is preset by somebody, not you. Because you always have 10 seconds, you always have 15 seconds, you always have 30 seconds, you always have probably 2 minutes. That's what this is about. So when you start by realizing that this is something you want in your life, learning this new subject, this is the hypothetical that I'm sticking with for now, that would give you joy. I've always wanted to learn about botany. I'm drinking mushroom coffee. That's as botanist as I'm going to get. But you want to learn about botany, but you don't have time because you get up in the morning, you got your cup of coffee, you read your paper, you you go to the bathroom and then, wait a second, what? You go to the bathroom? Uh-oh, I'm getting scatological, you guys. There's your freaking paragraph right there. Boom, nailed it. Sid with the potty talk. Good night. Someday I'll tell you about my how my parents, there was one kid that I grew up with who would like talk that way. And for my whole life, I'm not going to say his name because it just he's actually like a super awesome guy. He turned out to be like a mathematician and stuff. But they would say, oh, you're doing this guy's name potty talk. It's like, oh, you're doing the da-da-da potty talk. Like this, you equated this kid who just was scarlet lettered at like age four, his whole life. He's equated with potty talk. If I saw him in the street right now, if I said, oh my God, I haven't seen you in 30 years. It's amazing. In my brain, I'd be like, you're so potty talking all the time. But where was I? So you can find, first is to find the things, and this is the small stepping way, to find the things that would enhance your life. See how it's not, I want to get rid of this, not I want to stop this. Like I said last week, you can't just say, I'm going to stop doing this. I'm going to stop doing that. I'm going to lose the weight. How about bringing in? How about that, just that mindset of like, I'm gonna enhance my life. I remember I talked about the job last week. That's how you do this. You don't focus on the job that you can't stand because then you're thinking about something you can't stand all the time. But if you go, I got the job, that's just what it is right now for now. Not there yet. But what happens when I'm not at work? Can I bring something in that just gives me so much juice that not only is it pleasurable in the present when I'm doing it, but at work I go, yeah, it sucks, but man, when I get home, I'm going to doop. See what I'm saying? So that's the beauty of this. So in this case of the hypothetical reading, you find that moment and you find what you can do in those moments. Maybe you put it in your car. Maybe you're in your parking lot and you get, on those days when you get to work 5 minutes early, you read your paragraph there. But you know during the day, you're taking this on. You got this thing, man. It's the best, right? Okay. And that's how you do it. So this coming week, give that a shot. So I'm kind of jumping the gun a little bit because I was going to talk about this later, but the one of the many benefits of this approach that I've crafted is you're adding this. You're adding the, yeah, but I'm doing something about it. So I'm going to call this series the, yeah, but I'm doing something about it. So we often feel so powerless in our ability to make sustainable real change. That is the draw of diets, right? Because we feel in those very short periods of time, like I can do this, but it's the this that we're unclear about. What can I, well, I can follow a diet, but is it, can I do this, i.e. keep the weight off for the rest of my life and be a healthy, happy person that I truly am down, deep down? You don't know. Diet ain't going to teach you that whether you can or not. But what small steps does, and this is really something to think about, this is, again, speaking to that email from that guy, that listener last week of the job that he hates probably still. Yeah, but I'm doing something about it. So all the things that are just like just pissing you off, that you go, God, I'm overweight. I'm just freaking overweight and I'm sick of feeling this way and I don't like my body. I'm embarrassed about my body and I'm da 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 da. Small steps allows you to go all that and then go, yeah, but I'm doing something about it. I'm doing something about it. And is a diet doing something about it? Sure. While you're on the diet, absolutely. It's doing something about it. Absolutely. You see the results. But all I'm saying is this is more real. All I'm saying is my approach is more real. It's you actually doing something about it for real, for the rest. You're setting yourself up. It is not automatic. I mean, every client I have, including the one I have referenced, knows how just nervous and I get overprotective toward the end of my time with them because I want them to continue, because otherwise it'd just be another diet. So I'm teaching you guys, hopefully during this with podcasts, my videos, to learn this. Why? Because it's long term. That's why I come here every week. That's why people come and listen to me every week, because it's never learn the diet, moving on. No, ever, ever, never, never, never. But small steps adds the, God, I hate my job. Yeah, but I'm doing something about it because I spend 5 minutes a week researching other jobs or other trades or other classes I could take that will provide me with training to do something else eventually. I don't know. Yeah, but I'm doing something about it. Oh, man. Everything you want to do, the small steps allows you to immediately do something about it. That there is intense and immense power in that, to actually be doing something about it. But we think nothing can be done about it unless it's big enough for our freaking coworker Jack to notice. And it, that's a tough sell, because some of the small steps are so, and I think this is the best part about it. By the way, I've talked about it. It's like, I always tell people, don't talk about when you're doing this in the beginning, because it doesn't, everyone wants to talk about diets because the results are so, so drastic. Everybody notices. Well, I love the hidden part of this process. I love that it's like, it's between you and you. Like, I love that you can do all these amazing things at work and none of your coworkers know. You're taking on your life in the most profound way possibly that you ever have. You're asking yourself how you want to live your life. That's amazing. That we don't ask that question. And you can do these things and nobody knows you're doing it. You don't have to quit your job. You don't have to do a new shopping list. You don't have to go crazy and miss social engagements because you're on a diet and it's day 7. So you go to the social engagement. Nobody there knows that you just put celery on your plate because you're a small stepper and because you're engaging your life in a way that you never have. Nobody's going to ask. You don't have to feel, number one, like, I got to talk about it, or excited and then regret 4 months later when you have undone all the things you got done during the diet. Take that off the table, because 4 months later, you're going to be doing more than you were 4 months before. That's the beauty. How much more? I don't know. Maybe a ton more if you're ready. Maybe not so much if you're not. I don't know. That's up to you. That is the empowerment of this process. It's the empowerment of this process. It is me saying, here's the system. Do I help people get to know it on a private basis? Sure. But it's still, even on a private basis, not me deciding anything for my clients. Ask any of my clients if I've ever written out their steps lists every day and said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to add here. It's always, what do you think? What do you want to do? How's it working for you? What's not working? Do you want to decrease? Do you want to increase? It's always back in their court. Always back in their court. Because that's how it works. Because that's how it freaking works. And that's why it works. Because it's all about them. But there is the freedom, the liberation of feeling frustration at something that's not working for you. And then immediately, yeah, but I'm doing something about it. And only the sell that I, only the challenge that I have is only that to tell you guys how even the littlest of things is a fact that you're doing something about it. So if you're overweight and you're just eating junk food 3 times a day and you put a piece of celery on your plate at night, you're doing something about it. Now, most people would say you're not. And I say you are. And again, you can disagree with me or agree with me, but it is so much bigger than that celery for you to actually say, I'm doing something about it. It's amazing. And when you can say, yeah, but I'm doing something about it, it sort of naturally leads to, what else can I do about it? Can I do more about it right now? Am I not willing to do more about it right now? Am I okay with what I'm doing right now? Should I add a little bit more? Should I put 2 stalks of celery? But the conversation starts. The freaking conversation starts. There's no conversation around a diet, you guys, because you're not making decisions about anything. You're following someone's plan. And it'll get you the thing that they promised you, probably. But they're not promising you knowledge about yourself. They're not promising you lifelong sustainable change. You're not really doing something about your weight loss, most people. Now, if you're one of the 5% that started a diet and stayed on it for 20 years, then great. But I'm not talking to the 5%. I'm talking to the 95%, the people who want the same change, who want to feel better in their bodies, who frankly call it vanity. But I think it's, you know, why should you want to be embarrassed about your body? You know, we have all these conversations about just love the way you look. It's all good. And sure, I guess. But I think deep down, we kind of, you know, maybe don't want to admit the fact that we don't feel good in our bodies. And I think that's okay over time to understand that. And that we want to feel good maybe just because we want to look better. And I think that's okay. I don't think there's a problem with that. I don't think people are bad if they don't look good, but I think it's okay. And you, because it's not about anybody else but you. If you don't feel good in your body, if you don't feel vibrant, and sure, it's about energy and getting sick and all these kinds of things, but it can be just about that you want to look better. I think that that's absolutely okay. You want to present in that way. I think that's okay. I don't think you need to apologize for that at all. Okay. What I've been getting at is the subject of this week's podcast, which is overhead compartment. Boom. Super clever. Contents may have shifted. Whoa. That didn't make any sense. Sorry, I went too far on that. But I'm going to talk about compartmentalizing. What I'm going to talk about is, well, I'm going to start by this. I got an email and I just emailed them back today. So it's literally, and I don't think they listen to the podcast, but even if they do, it's what it is. But there's some students who are doing this documentary film, and they emailed me and said they saw me speak in Portland and liked what I had to say. And they're doing a thing on the environment and just like the generation of, I think it's, you know, whatever. They're doing something about the environment and people and how we're screwing everything up. It's the nutshell. That's the pitch. And I don't know if I'm the right person because I don't really talk about, I'm not like an environmental podcaster. I think that we should all take care of ourselves on a much deeper level, because if we did, we would probably be taking care of things a little bit better in terms of our house that we live in. But don't get me started. The point I wanted to make is this, and I've talked about this before, so bear with me again. The ability we have to connect with the entire world, the knowledge that we have, the awareness that we have of things going on literally on the other side of the earth, the concept that we understand that there are, I think 7 billion is what we're up to now, I could be wrong about that, so I'm sorry I didn't get this freaking latest census report, for crying out loud, but let's just say for fun, 7 billion people on the earth. It's a mind blower. We actually can't even physically conceive of that many people. We know the number. We can say the number, 7 billion people, but we can't actually understand what that looks like or physically what that is. It's a number beyond anything we've been able to evolve to know and to understand. It's just too huge. But when we consider how many people, we can easily say, if I throw a piece of trash on the ground, really, what difference is that? I'm one person. What difference is that going to make? And we can immediately compartmentalize the knowledge that with 7 billion people on the earth, it does make a difference. Why? Because there's 7 billion freaking people on the earth. So that if everybody's doing this, it's a massive problem, hence the problems that we're having environmentally, is it's a too many people problem. It's not one person driving an SUV. It's literally billions of people doing this kinds of damage, and that is creating the imbalance. But I don't. Here's the argument I make. I think that deep down, every human being, most is humane. I think that most of us are humane. I think most of us swerve in the road to miss a squirrel. I think that that's what I see most of the time. I think that most of us, if you ask, do care about the environment and don't want the environment to be destroyed. You might disagree with global warming as being affected by humans or not, but you don't want the environment to be destroyed. I think all of us can agree we don't want to destroy the earth that we're on. We might disagree that it's being destroyed, fine. But I don't think we would disagree with that. I think that the issue is that we can compartmentalize our personal actions or our small awareness around us actions such that we think, well, it's not really that big of a deal. This is just that one thing. I'm going to just do that one thing. And I can kind of, the idea of 7 billion people and the idea of the actual devastation that's happening, we can kind of put down in another area. The problem is that compartmentalizing is, it doesn't make it go away. It shoves it into an area. And this is the yet another power of the small steps and another appropriate way to achieve less compartmentalizing, which is to small step your way in a way that little things come out in very tempered, very regulated ways so that you don't open the floodgates and it all comes in and you're like, oh my God, I'm doing this horrible thing. But you just kind of let little things out and you make adjustments as they do. That comes back to but I'm doing something about it. Through the small steps process, maybe you've told yourself, I'm happy with the way I look. I'm just using this, you guys, it's not a thing. I'm not like harping on vanity or anything like that. But maybe you're like, I'm fine. I look fine. I see movies. I'm fine. real women have curves, so I'm fine. But maybe you're not. And again, there's no objectivity here. But maybe you're not. And maybe as you engage more in your life, you realize, you know, I actually don't like being unhealthy. And my weight is showing that my body's under stress, because that is a body's stress response, is to put weight around the midsection. So you're like, I'm going to look at it a different way. And I'm going to go, my body is really serving me really well. And it's doing a great job, but I'm putting it under stress by not feeding it well, and by my job, and by my not exercising or exercising too much, and all these kinds of things. And that's coming out now. It's all of a sudden you're like, I'm actually not happy with my body. It's decompartmentalizing. It's coming out. And then you react by saying, I can actually do something about this. I don't have to feel bad about this, because every time I feel bad about it, I say, yeah, but I'm doing something about it. And anybody you talk to would say, yeah, but you're fixing the problem. I always say situation. You're fixing the situation. I loved Crunch Berries. I think I've talked about them on the podcast before. Like, that was, if you guys are not in the United States, which many of you are not, Crunch Berries, Captain Crunch, Crunch Berries, by far the best invention to come out of the United States. By far, there's not a single technology better than Crunch Berries. That's just my opinion. But I have a Crunch Berry problem. And this is the problem. When I was a kid, I said to myself, when I'm an adult, I'm freaking Crunch Berrying up, right? Because it was like a sugar cereal and my parents didn't allow it in the house. And it was kind of like, I'd go to friends' houses and have Crunch Berries for dessert. Like, they'd be like, why are you eating cereal for dessert? I'd be like, because it's the best thing in the world. They're eating ice cream and I'm just Crunch Berrying. It's a phenomenally good cereal. But anyway, do I sound like I have a problem with it? A little bit. Like, my hand's shaking right now. It's just exciting. The problem is that as a kid, I said, when I'm an adult, Crunch Berrying up. Nobody can stop me. I'm just going to stock my shelves with Crunch Berries. The problem is once I knew that it was not a good thing, it didn't make me feel good, it was not a healthy food by any stretch of the imagination, I have two choices at that point. Not do it most of the time, or compartmentalize that knowledge and keep going. Many of us in the modern world compartmentalize the damage we're doing to ourselves. We're compartmentalizing the damage we may be doing to the world. Why? Because it's a massive undertaking to have that out front all the time. I want to be clear about this, really clear. So listen to this, what I'm about to say. Compartmentalization is absolutely necessary for the survival of us individually. We cannot not compartmentalize. We cannot let everything out. Why? Because we have too much access to knowledge now. Compartmentalizing is an absolute necessity as a balance to how much we know about. We know about absolute horrors happening in the world right now to humans and animals alike. We know that stuff. We're not supposed to know that stuff. We're not supposed to know what's going on even 50 miles from us, but we do. And for us to get out of the frickin' bed in the morning means we have to put that knowledge somewhere that it does not upset our day-to-day, so that we can go to work and make money and buy food and get through this frickin' life the best that we can. We have to compartmentalize. It's a survival necessity. It's a survival necessity. But on an individual level, what I'm arguing here is to say that via engaging in a small steps way, via engaging in what I always say is the first task, which is to ask yourself who you are, who you truly are. Well, I'm a healthy person. I'm happy in my body. I feel good about my body. Even if you don't and you haven't, but that defines who you are. You want to be somebody like that. And so you say it in present tense. I feel good in my body. I'm thin. I have a healthy body. I'm vibrant. I have energy. I'm a good runner. I love swimming. I swim most of the time. However you define yourself, I spend time with friends. I don't let the damage in the world get me down. But I'm not afraid to know it either. How do you define yourself? It all starts there. When you engage in that way and define yourself in that way, you're in control of the bits that become decompartmentalized. They become decompartmentalized in non-violent you know, non-breakdown ways. Like, it's just not this flood where all of a sudden you're curled up in the fetal position because too much too soon, you know, like, oh my, I have now have just flooded with bad news. When you can incrementally let this stuff out, stuff that maybe you've been holding on to forever. That's the thing. It's like, I've worked with people years ago, so this is not like any kind of problem. This is before I was even a small stepper, but just like the nutrition, where people are like, I have no problem the way that I eat, but I knew that they did because they were coming to me for nutrition help. And they're like, oh no, I don't feel regret about that, but I think they weren't maybe in a, and I'm not a psychologist, so I can only give them the plan, et cetera, but now as a small stepper, I'm still not a psychologist, but I can say engaging in your life, maybe things come up where you realize I'm actually not happy in my job. I've been compartmentalizing that knowledge and convincing myself that I am, just like I can convince myself that eating dessert's no big deal because I run and I burn off enough calories during the day and it's fine. I earned it, blah, 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 all these kinds of language things that we do. Meanwhile, the real knowledge is deep down in me that says, I don't want to do that. I don't want to be beholden to something that I don't have control over if I can actually, quote, do something about it. I don't want that there. But I got to get to the point where I can admit that. I got to get to the point where the compartmentalization of that knowledge breaks down just enough to start giving me little hints that I'm not happy with that part of my life. Things that are very hard to admit. Things about in our relationships sometimes where we go, you know, I'm actually not that happy. We want to put on the face to the world and to ourselves so that we can get through the day. I freaking get it. I get it more than most people probably get it because it's what I do and how I live myself. But there is, again, intense and immense power in the knowledge that there are things you want to change. And when you come at your life as a small stepper, you don't just equate that knowledge in the moment with, okay, now I have to change that entire thing right now in this moment. You go, good to know. Now I can set about the business of figuring out a way to fix the situation in a way that doesn't add even more stress to me, that doesn't make me even more debilitated. It is the alcoholic realizing they have a problem, realizing it's not who they are to be somebody who drinks without control, to say, I'm going to a meeting. I'm not going to solve my alcoholism ever. I'm always going to be an alcoholic, but I'm doing something about it. I'm doing something about it. I'm stagnant. I sit down all day. I don't do anything. I don't move my body. I'm not happy with that. I don't feel good. I don't have good energy. My mood is sullen. But I get up and I do a squat 3 times a day. I'm doing something about it. I'm just taking that thing on in such a powerful way that it makes me feel so good. And then I go, oh, arsenal of experience. What's it like for me to feel this good? What's it like to feel like I'm fixing my situation? What's that like? But instead, we don't exercise because we think to do exercise means the gym and et cetera, et cetera. I got to go to the 30 minutes of runs. I've said this a million times. So we don't do anything. So we don't say, yeah, but I'm doing something about it. What we say is, yeah, I should do something about that. Yeah, I should look for another job. Yeah, I should eat better. Yeah, I should call my mom. Yeah, I should. The tension of should, you guys remember that? So long ago, you can't even hear it on iTunes. That's how long ago. The tension of should. It's removing the shoulds, because with every should is a compartmentalized knowledge that we can't let out day to day because it's too freaking painful and we got too much on our minds anyway. The tension of should is all the things we think we should do, but most of the time we stuff that stuff down because we don't want to think about all the things we should do. We want to get through the days of the things that we have to do. We want to get through this day of the have-tos. Forget about the shoulds. Yeah, I should exercise, but I freaking got to earn a living and I got to raise 3 kids. Small steps goes, yes, you do. And yes, you do. But while you're waiting for the food, the soup to heat up on the stove, you're going to do 5 squats. Yeah, but I'm doing something about it. I want to be clear that the small steps approach, you guys, is always and ever will be a combo of knowledge and action. It's a combination of knowledge and action. And I think that in a lot of what guides us in the world today, I think a lot of what guides us is way more in the knowledge camp. That's why on websites of health types themes, most of what you are going to see there is lists of, you know, the top five superfoods and, you know, the things you should do. Top five yoga poses and all these kinds of things. Top five this, top five that. Top five best sources of protein. That's knowledge. Okay, good to know. But the implementation of that is really left by the wayside. And in my approach to be successful in my field, I just flipped that completely on its head. Said, okay, good. I can teach you enough nutrition in about an hour, but then let's get busy on the actual implementation, because that's going to be the actual effort and challenge and struggle. I mean, that's going to be the thing that shapes the rest of your life, is the implementation of that knowledge. We make it about knowledge, and every book comes out every freaking 5 minutes that says they've got their research that's showing that this is black, and then somebody else shows, no, I have research showing this is white, and somebody goes, oh yeah, but and meanwhile, that's knowledge, great, but we're not living better. We're not living better. We're not happier. We're not healthier. Again, I can come back to this 1,000 times, because the facts are there. We're not living healthier. We know more than we've ever known in the history of mankind. We have more access to more knowledge than we've ever had in the history of mankind. We now can find research papers and books online in a matter of seconds. We have this knowledge. How are we doing with it? At what point do we balance that knowledge by saying, what if we know enough? What if we know enough, but what happens then? The problem is that there's safety in, like, I gotta know more, because, again, I talked about last week, distraction. It's a distraction. You can know enough about most things, but then there's the learning how to live, learning how to implement the knowledge. We want to get on there and say, okay, what's that? What's that vitamin? What's that do? Do I gotta take that? Okay, what's that thing? What's that herb thing? Oh, good, I gotta do that. Meanwhile, we don't even stick to those things because we haven't even learned how to implement freaking taking a pill. Unless the doctor tells us, somehow we're okay with the prescription, because we're usually at a point where it's serious enough to get on a prescription drug. And so we'll remember that. But we don't usually stick to the thing that doesn't give us immediate results. We'll stick to the antibiotics because they're 5-7 days. But what about the pill that is an herb that we're supposed to take for the next 90 days, for the next 6 months, to see some subtle difference that's not really that drastic anyway? We've got to learn how to implement. That's what's missing. If it were about knowledge, you guys, we would be the most healthy and happy species in the history of the world, because we know so much. We know how to contact people across the world by typing a few things and hitting send and just instantaneous. We know how to do that. We know how to contact people, but we don't socialize that well. We don't maintain quality relationships the way that we could, much less should. We know how to transport healthy food all over the earth to most places. Unfortunately, not all places, but most. And yet we don't choose to eat it. It's the most amazing. We have actually enough. We have unfettered access for most of us in the developed world. Of course, there's exceptions, you guys. So somebody's going to email me and go, yeah, but what about in freaking New Jersey? Okay, but listen. Billions of people have access to healthy food. We're not eating it. We can actually live. We have access to meditation tapes. We have access to treadmills and gyms and in our office buildings sometimes. And we have access to all these amazing access to outside. We can go outside and be in the sun, but we don't. We're implementation deficient, not knowledge deficient. And we want to go for more knowledge, and it's a draw, and it's exciting to learn, and it's exciting to think maybe that's the next thing. If I take that thing, that's going to solve all my problems. But we don't implement. And it is about the implementation. Because here's the thing. To get, like, real back to compartmentalizing a little bit. Remember, I said it's a combo of knowledge and action, because the fact of the matter is, living in the modern world, I drink scotch. Okay, now I'm down about one a week. This is on average, probably a little less these days. I don't know why. Whatever, I have no problem with it. But I know scotch is bad. I know scotch is not healthy. I know that upsets the bacterial balance in my body. I know it's not a good thing. The question remains that, okay, if I know that it's bad for me, if I think it's absolutely horrible, I probably wouldn't do it. The question is how much, if any, can I drink that I won't need to compartmentalize or somehow make it sound all right to myself? If I can drink one a week and I don't have to compartmentalize and walk around saying, I don't drink, it's not bad for me. It's fine. It's not, I don't have a problem with it. But if I can have one a week and go to you in a public podcast where thousands of people listen to me and say, I have a scotch a week and I don't really feel that bad about it at all, I actually enjoy it, then that's kind of okay for me. But if I'm going to sit here and for you guys, I may be doing this, but for all you know, I may be. But if I'm sitting here and go, I have one a week, but I'm actually having five a night and I'm pushing that down, that's the debilitation. Or if I'm having one a week, but I don't feel good about it and I wish I didn't have it, that's the debilitation. And if I continue that action, but just compartmentalize the fact that I'm not happy about it, there's a cost to that. There's a cost to pushing these things down and keeping our actions that we're doing that are in conflict with who we are and keeping that in a pocket where we can't look at that. The fact of the matter is, you guys, all of us are acting in ways that are in conflict with who we are on some level every day. That's just a fact. But if we accept that, we can compartmentalize that less. We can hold on to less of that and be okay with that knowledge. That's the place to start to actually improve. Not to 100% fix. I don't know what that even means. But to improve, to engage, to live what I say at the beginning of this podcast. To teach you how to live better. Not to teach you how to live the best, because I don't know what that is for you. But I do know that it's about teaching you how to live better in the modern world. And that starts with engaging in a way that allows things to be decompartmentalized in your head, to let things out in regulated ways so that you can address them. I'm not happy with my body. Okay, can I small step something to affect change over time with that? Well, maybe you realize I'm super not happy with my body. Okay, well, then the size of your small step may be a little bit bigger than somebody who goes, I'm not happy with my body, but I really have a hard time around food. And the idea of making a drastic change is stressing me out, blah, blah, blah. So the small stepper goes, okay, well, there's the stalk of celery. There's the little thing. But of course, it's the in-between that makes it never an objective. That's why I can't put steps in people's mouths, because I don't know, there's a, between the one stalk of celery and the, you know, 100% salads all the time, there's a lot of areas there. That's the beauty of small steps, is you're engaged in the process of figuring out what works for you. And ultimately, by the way, over time, if you stick to this process, you'll learn that the idea of which step to take first becomes so easy, because it's, you don't have to come up with the right one. You just dive in. You're like, okay, well, I always wanted a needle point, so I'm going to needle point 10 minutes a day. Is that okay? I don't know. I'm going to start with 10 minutes a day. Because the small stepper knows that after 2 weeks, if they didn't needle point at all, then he or she is going to lower that step back down to something that they're going to try again and go, okay, well, I couldn't do 10 minutes a day, so I'm going to do 5 minutes a day. There's no failure there. It's called freaking fixing the situation, which is that you want to do that because it's going to give you joy. So you engage. That's what I had to do many, many moons ago on this podcast, where I wanted to journal again. And I started with 10 minutes a day and I never journaled because it was too much. And I really had to eat crow on that, because I thought that was going to be the easiest thing in the world. And I ended up having to go with one word in a journal that I kept in my pocket, because that was another solution to the problem, to the situation rather, was that I never had the journal on me when I did think about journaling. So I put one in my pocket, started with one word a day. Now, a year later or more, I journal every night, most nights. And I'm better for it. Not better, I'm better than you, I'm living better. Remember? It's about living better. My eyes on the ball. If it didn't add to my, I've done it long enough now that if it didn't add to my life, it didn't enhance my life, I'd stop because I'm in freaking charge. But this is that process. How do you, over time, given the logistics of our lives day to day with the families and the kids and the, everything else that we have, jobs and everything else that we have going, can we craft a system? Can we craft a way to come at our lives so that things are becoming less compartmentalized? Can we already, like I said, it's necessary. I already can't think about what's going on in countries where children are literally starving today. I think about that stuff. I don't get out of bed in the morning. I've got my own kids. I have responsibilities to things going on. If I let all that damage in to my life, I will not be able to get out of bed and won't be able to actually contribute, hopefully, some positive change in the world to maybe affect that on some level. Maybe I can say, if I compartmentalize that a little bit and put that down so that it's not in my freaking face all the time, I can say, yeah, but I'm doing something about it. I'm acting on an individual level in a way that is a way that I think is going to affect change in the world. If I end up influencing some people and so on and so forth down the line, they influence people, et cetera, et cetera. Some compartmentalizing it's necessary. It's necessary. There's too much pain in the world to have it in your face all day. But there's other things that we are compartmentalizing that we could let out that's going to liberate us from that and allow us to deal with the other pain that we exist in the world in a much more healthy perspective way. And we can get out of bed and we can forge out some sort of happiness and we can enrich other people's lives the more that we take care of ourselves and we can help other people do what they want to do in their lives the more we help ourselves. And we can do that because we can strike a balance between the things that we just don't want to think about all the time with the things that we've not been thinking about but are ready to think about. And those are the things that we let out and those are the things that enhance our lives and those are the things that ultimately make us happy. And I always say health and happiness, but the fact of the matter is it really is about happiness. And I just think that health is one of the things that helps make us happy. But it is about you guys being happy. It's about forging out lives, and me too, for ourselves that we become happy. That is the goal for all humans. I think it's our natural design to be happy. We want joy. We want pleasure. We don't want to be smacked in the face with bad news all the time. We can't do it. We cannot do it. So we small step in ways that allows things to be freed up in our bodies and minds to allow us to make real change, to allow us to engage further in our lives, to allow us to be happier. All right, you guys. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Thank you for writing me. Thank you for donating. However you've chosen to support this podcast is okay by me, you guys. Reviews on iTunes and approaching Amazon, my next book. podcast@sidgarzahillman.com is my email address. If you have any questions or comments, let them roll. In the meantime, come back next week for the Approaching the Natural podcast. I will be here. Have a good week, you guys. Be well. Stepped off the airplane and started to cry. She cried all the way home, face outward to hide. I struggled for sentence, I struggled for words. Sometimes the silence is what should be heard. Was the third time, and now is the last time, and I could rest assured. She saw death and repetition.
this was now it. She said she was intention. Just said, oh. Stay city out loud tomorrow. She walked on ahead, she'd been there before. I offered a refuge like I'd done before. Said words to convince him, couldn't do any good. Actions were stronger, less misunderstood. She said this was the third time, and now was the last time I could rest assured. She saw death in repetition, but this was now ended. She said she was intention. Just said, oh. Stay city out loud tonight. This would be the land. I said this was the third time. Is this the last time? Help me rest assured. My judgment falls silent. I learned the last time. Still I am in. The stick is out, see how long to go. But this might be the land.